Welcome to Home Lab Highlights, the show that surfaces practical home lab wins and useful self-hosted tools. Let's start with a story that's pure home lab spirit. Someone decided to build a Linux container entirely by hand this weekend. No Docker or Podman in sight. The author over at dietpie.com says it wasn't about breaking new ground, but about actually understanding what happens when you run Docker Run. They wanted to stop taking the whole containerization stack for granted.
So they had to run it inside a Lima VM on macOS because Darwin doesn't have namespaces or C groups natively. Then they pieced it together step by step. OverlayFS for the image layers, Unshare for the namespaces, Truth for the file system jail, cgroups v2 to set a real memory cap, and a vth pair with nat for networking. The article mentions they even triggered an actual OOM kill from their own cgroup limit, which they described as weirdly satisfying.
That's the kind of hands-on learning that really sticks. They also ran into a specific vert.iofs bind mount limitation that choked SudoTools editable installs because of missing uTime support, which took a while to track down. The whole write-up is a step-by-step guide with the what and why for each piece, plus all the gotchas and failed attempts. It's exactly the kind of deep dive that makes you appreciate the abstractions we use every day.
Moving to the feed, and first up is a vendor post from Docker about MinIO reaching end of life. According to the article, the MinIO open source project was archived upstream back in February, a project with over a billion Docker pulls that just stopped shipping releases and security patches overnight.
Docker's pitching its extended lifecycle support, or ELS, as the answer. It's a paid add-on to their Hardened Images subscription that keeps end-of-life software patched and audit-ready for up to 5 years. The article says it covers everything from end-of-life versions of supported software all the way up to entire archived projects like MinIO, with critical CVEs patched on a 14-day SLA. The vendor's argument is that this hands the migration schedule back to you instead of letting the audit calendar dictate it. It's a commercial solution, but it highlights the real operational headache when a foundational project like MinIO, which a lot of labs use for S3-compatible storage, just vanishes from active maintenance.
Next, a brief note from the Nextcloud community. They've published a detailed overview positioning Nextcloud Hub as the European alternative to Microsoft 365 and Google Workspace. It's a comprehensive rundown of all the components: files, talk, groupware, office, assistant, and flow, and how they come together. The post is essentially a feature tour for anyone considering a fully self-hosted collaboration suite. They're really pushing the idea of data sovereignty and avoiding vendor lock-in, which is a strong pitch for the home lab crowd that's already invested in running their own services.
And a quick one from Hacker News. A project called Bookshelf popped up. It's a self-hosted ebook library designed to run on object storage. That's it, just a single binary in front of your S3-compatible store. A neat option for anyone with a digital book collection they want to keep local.
Back to a full story, this one from The Verge. Graphene OS, the de-Googled Android variant that prioritizes security, has detailed plans to support Motorola smartphones starting next year. Official support is set to arrive for traditional flagships first, then roll out to Motorola's Razr Fold and Razr Ultra foldables.
The Graphene OS Foundation said in a Mastodon thread that this year's Motorola handsets are very close to meeting their requirements, but lack mature support for hardware memory tagging and secure element integration. They're targeting Motorola's 2027 phones, expecting the next generation of Qualcomm Snapdragon chips to meet their standards. It's notable because until now, Graphene has only officially supported Google's Pixel phones. For anyone in the community looking to de-Google a phone, this could mean more hardware choices and potentially better prices down the line.
For our tool highlight, let's look at a project that showed up on Hacker News, Walljit. It's a Git server that is, as described, one binary in front of an object store.
That description is pretty literal. The idea is you run this single binary, and it handles the Git protocol, pushing and pulling, but it stores all the repository data, the objects, the refs, directly into a backend object store. Think S3, or any S3-compatible storage like MinIO or Backblaze. Your home lab NAS with an S3 interface becomes your Git server's backend. The project supports both SSH and HTTP for transport, which covers the main ways you'd interact with it. That architecture makes the operational side interesting. The binary itself is stateless. All the state lives in the object store. Scaling or moving the server becomes a matter of pointing a new instance at the same bucket. For a home lab, it could simplify backups dramatically. Your Git repos are already in your object storage backup strategy. The trade-off, of course, is that every operation goes through that storage layer, so latency to your object store becomes a direct factor in performance. It's a specific take on the Git server problem, favoring simplicity and cloud-native storage patterns over the file system-based approach of something like Gitea. For someone already running object storage in their lab, it's a compelling, minimal option to check out. You get the Git protocol without the overhead of managing a separate database or file system, and your repos live in the same place as the rest of your object-backed infrastructure.
Finally, a community highlight from an essay that circulated on Hacker News. The piece, by Boyd Kane, explores a theoretical security concern. The idea that large language models could potentially control their host machines by exploiting their own inference engine.
The argument is that the inference engine, the software that actually runs the model, has full control over the host system. If an LLM's output could somehow influence or compromise that engine, it might gain a form of indirect execution. The essay treats it as a speculative attack vector, a way to think about the security boundaries between the model's generated content and the system running it. Kane suggests this isn't about a specific bug today, but about a class of architectural risk that could emerge as these systems become more complex and integrated.
It's a thought experiment more than a reported vulnerability, but it's the kind of forward-looking security discussion that matters for home labs starting to run local models. It asks what happens when the thing generating code also has some level of access to the runtime environment. For operators hosting their own AI tools, it's a nudge to consider sandboxing and isolation just as seriously as they would for any other internet-facing service. Running your LLM in an unprivileged container or a dedicated VM suddenly sounds like a very reasonable precaution, not just overhead. If the model can't break out of its sandbox, it doesn't matter what it tries to do with the inference engine. It's the same principle that applies to any untrusted code execution, and generated code from an LLM, even one you're running locally, still counts as untrusted until proven otherwise.
That's HomeLab Highlights for Monday. Until next time, happy hosting.